This is Adrienne Shapiro, and I'd like to welcome you to Access Advocacy on thepowerofvoices.com. And we're here today after having a fabulous experience with the 9th Annual Sickle Cell Symposium in Fresno, California. And I have with me super nurse advocate Pat Corley, and we have with us our new friend, Bishop Bob Kabugi.
Correct, yes.
Who was also attending the conference, and we thought this is really great. We keep talking about what's happening in Africa,
yes,
and how we can help or not help. We know that ASH is doing quite a bit, and now we get to hear from the other side of where the boots are actually on the ground, living this experience, the things they're doing. So, welcome, Pat.
Thanks. I'm really happy to be here because we have someone from Kenya who's sharing all the things that are going on over in his country, so that we can just take a look at what's going on in his country and what's going on in our country and how we can help people across the waters.
Okay. And Bishop Bob, and they do call you Bishop Bob, right?
Yes, no, that's okay. That's good. Good enough. Okay.
So Bishop Bob is a pastor of the Glorious Church in Kenya.
Yes.
He's working with the Sickle Cell Warriors in Kenya. He is a patron of the Sickle Cell Warriors in Kenya group. And his church leadership is taking a real lead in, I would say, care and education of those living with sickle cell, where there is a real challenge. And it's, again, that whole theme we have of taking responsibility for ourselves, figuring out what we can do at the grassroots level, and learning from each other.
Mm-hmm.
So we're just going to sit back and have a chat about things.
Yes.
And we're going to let Bishop Bob tell you a bit more about himself.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Adrienne. And I can tell you that the challenge of sickle cell disease in Kenya is quite a big challenge, and we are currently working on it because I don't think we can wait for people to come from outside and start helping us. We have taken the initiative in terms of taking this problem head on and seeing that we help our countrymen, our brothers and sisters, in terms of information and bringing into the communities of Kenya the awareness of the repercussions or the things that sickle cell disease can do. We are taking the responsibility now, especially in churches and also sometimes in the mosques, where we are able to speak to congregations and people who are in the mosques, and we are educating them in what to do or how they can participate in this challenge. Because the sickle cell issue in Kenya, and not only in Kenya, in East Africa, is a huge issue. Where in some places, in some regions, up to about 35% of the people have sickle cell traits. And having a 35% people with sickle cell trait, it means that the people who are born in that region are born with sickle cell, the trait S. And that's what we are doing. We want to really participate, go out and educate our people, teach them how to react or to respond to this challenge.
Yes, you've heard us often say that sickle cell is the same disease anywhere in the world.
Mm-hmm.
The difference is that the reason our children live to be adults and we have that high ratio of survival into young adulthood is that we have protocols in place for treatment of our children so that they don't succumb to some of the conditions that bring on early death, where in other countries, it's the exact opposite. So where we have 90 to 95% survival, they're having 90 to 95% early death.
We've been very fortunate to have newborn screening in this country, so that most babies born in this country are screened for sickle cell disease prior to going home from the hospital. Fortunately, that gives us an opportunity to intervene very early to prevent some problems that might occur with sepsis or infection by placing babies who are identified to have sickle cell disease on prophylactic penicillin, which prevents them from dying from overwhelming infections. So that's one of the things that has happened in this country that has really benefited us, and hopefully that can be shared as a treatment option in countries like Kenya, where we could actually, because it's relatively reasonable to provide penicillin and folic acid, which is increases vitamin B, mm-hmm. and prevents sickling from occurring as much as it normally does, mm-hmm. helps people to build good red blood cells.
All right.
And so if we could institute just a little change, we could probably make a difference mm-hmm. in how children with sickle cell disease live in Kenya. And so I'm hopeful that by us networking with you in Kenya,
yes,
that
yes.
we can make a difference.
Agreed. Pat, I just mentioned there that the biggest challenge that we had in Kenya was to identify or to screen the newborns. That was a big challenge because, number one, they were only available in big cities. The ability to screen was only available in big cities. And wherever it was available, it was very expensive. So a lot of people did not get access to early screening. And subsequently, the only time you find that these people were detected to have sickle cell is when they appeared in hospital having different organ damaged. And when they came for that organ damage, they were sick due to the organ damage. That's when they were discovered that they had sickle cell. But today, God has been very gracious, and we can now screen children, newborns. In fact, newborns maybe after a week or so, or 2 weeks, we can screen for the sickle cell disease using what is available now in our country called the sickle scan, which is a kit. It's a rapid kit that diagnoses sickle cell disease in 5 minutes, and it's now available. The challenge again is that most folks who are very, very low income areas are not able to afford, although it's much cheaper. It's gone to about $6 to $7, the cost of a sickle scan kit, as opposed to $80 to $90 earlier on. And it's gone down to about $8 now, which is a good drop. So the issue of newborn screening, it's available now, and we can do it. However, we have to, again, get the proper protocols with the government and the Ministry of Health and all that. But we are working on that, and we are sensitizing that very much and trying to push for the government to begin to adopt this new screening methods, which can make a whole lot of difference in terms of screening and then treating or advocating for the penicillin and other folic acid and other medicine that are available to be used for treating sickle cell.
Great.
Well, we know that ASH, the American Society for Hematology, mm-hmm. has taken on sickle cell as its lead campaign for mm-hmm. the next few years. Mm-hmm. We also know that they are kicking off programs in Africa.
Mm-hmm.
And we've been told that they are really systematically addressing certain areas, but we do know that Kenya is not a country that ASH has targeted mm-hmm. for the first wave of its campaign. So that you are doing something mm-hmm. on your own mm-hmm. is really, really encouraging.
It is.
I think we kind of have trouble because we grow, we have cities. So it's hard for us to kind of envision what happens I guess the disconnect between the large cities and then the smaller
The rural areas.
Yeah, the rural areas.
Okay.
So how is that set up? There's a government has a health or the equivalent to our health department, and how do they oversee things that are happening outside of the city?
Yes, they're there. The health facilities are there in the city, and the ones in the city are advantaged because probably in the city you find everything happening and people there, they are working. People in the cities have got a regular income, and subsequently they are able to take themselves through even private health care. However, the folks in the villages and in rural areas, some of them are really hit hard by poverty, and subsequently they can't afford even the slightest care that they should provide for themselves. The facilities in the cities are reasonably good, and I can say they have advanced in some way. But in the rural area, a lot needs to be done by the government. And we are advocating for that the government should stock every health facility with the equipment and things and the medicines and all those, which are very rare to come by in a rural setup. But we are getting there. We are talking to the Ministry of Health. We are advocating for them to go into the rural areas and start providing all that is needed for them to be able to tackle this issue of sickle cell.
So do you have nurses and doctors who are working with you on getting these programs set up and providing services?
Yes, we have some nurses and some doctors actually who have volunteered to give their services to most of the areas where we go. Like we've just come back from Kisumu. Kisumu is one of the cities in the western side of Kenya, which has a lot of prevalence in sickle cell. And we had doctors from Uzima College. Uzima College is a university college that is a Catholic university college. We had doctors from there. We had Professor Muga, who is actually been very, very pivotal and helpful in terms of helping the people, the folks around there. We have volunteer doctors who have come up and they are working with us in terms of reaching out to the rural folks who have very low income in terms of earnings. And we currently, I can say we have about 12 doctors who are working with us, and they are doing a perfect job, although it is like an uphill battle. But we are fighting it. We are moving step by step, day by day. But if the government came in full force and advocated and gave us resources and gave us manpower, this can be achieved in a very short time.
So I was also wondering if you have other people, like social workers and other folks who can support the families as they go through their challenges.
We are developing social workers for ourselves. We are doing it. We are saying warriors for warriors. That's our theme. We are looking at people already living with sickle cell, but we are empowering them and giving them the information. And these are the ones who are going to go into the villages and start working with us in those areas. They are also needy in terms. They are also people with sickle cell. But after we train them, they go out there. But per se, to say that the government has given us social workers, it's not a truthful statement.
Do you have some people within the village that you can train there so that you get, in each village you have people that you have identified who would be your experts?
That's right. That's what we're doing. We want to train trainers of trainers so that we go and establish in a small village and we train maybe about 4 or 5 people depending on who is available. Then we train these people to train others, so that at least we can tackle this problem from the grassroots, from the bottom, because we have seen that when we attack it from the bottom, we are able to climb step by step and move on higher.
So if there was one thing that you could have, mm-hmm. what would you most want related to sickle cell and the services that you need?
I would like the government to put in place the policy of early screening our newborns. If that policy goes into place and all people who are, all children born in the country are tested for sickle cell, that my prayer will be answered.
Well, we know that makes a difference. And, well, we're going to take a break now. Once again, you're listening to Access Advocacy, and we're on thepowerofvoices.com. We'll be back in a few minutes. Welcome back to Access Advocacy on the Power of Voices. We're here today speaking about the state of people living with sickle cell disease in Kenya. We're with Bishop Bob Kabugi and Nurse Pat Corley. Welcome back. We've been talking a lot about the disease in terms of its characteristics for the children, but let's talk some numbers. All right, so it's our understanding that there is a huge, over 25% of the people in Kenya have sickle cell trait.
Yes.
Or SCT, or AS, which, and as a result of that, in the amount of children born, or the amount of people actually surviving and still living, is 4% of your population.
These are the people who develop the SS trait.
Okay.
Some of them, 90% of them, don't see their fifth birthday.
All right. So this is the birth population.
Yes.
This is actually a population with SS disease.
Yes. Right. Yes.
Sickle cell anemia.
Exactly. Agreed.
So you kind of think of it and you think, oh, 4% isn't a lot. But that's 4%. Of how many people?
46 million.
Yeah, that's a lot of people.
It's about 2 million people.
That is a lot of people.
It is.
Because here it's considered so rare that we hear this everywhere we go. Oh, that's a rare disease. And we think we have 100,000 people living with it. It's like the largest rare disease group, I think, in the country. And here, I can't imagine those mothers.
Those mothers, they go through very difficult times because most of it, especially in some areas where sickle cell disease is very prevalent, like in the western part of the country and also in the coastal part of the country, thousands of children are born with sickle cell disease, the SS, and most of them, they die early because there are no interventions, early interventions that are taken into place, and this is what we were saying earlier, that it would be simple if there was available the intervention path, intervention processes that would reduce the most internal damages and internal sicknesses of a children. And they could live longer, and they could live a better life.
I think particularly with our American audience, it's going to sound pretty amazing, but if you really think about it, sickle cell isn't a racial disease, it's an environmental disease.
It's a disease for everyone. It's a disease for everybody.
So these areas, malaria is quite prevalent, right?
Yes,
these are the areas where there's lakes and a lot of water, as opposed to what we, again, as most Americans, envision. Africa, it's very dry. It has no water. It has no mountains. It's got, I don't know, tall grass. I mean, pretty much, that's what we think.
We have very big water bodies. We have like Lake Victoria, which is the lake near Kisumu, which is a huge water body. We have the Indian Ocean on the eastern side, another very large water bodies. And malaria is available in those areas. Yes.
Well, I think, again, this is striking to us. I mean, and it is because we think we're the only ones that are overlooked. And you do hear so much about eradicating malaria, getting rid of malaria.
Yes.
And it would seem that it would be natural to have in that discussion about malaria and affecting the children to have a discussion about sickle cell disease.
Yes, yes. It would be very beneficial if it was considered the same way malaria is treated in Africa, because it's a big thing. Malaria is a big thing in Africa, and big international funding bodies are coming into and funding malaria.
Exactly.
If there was, say for example, a big donor or a person who is concerned about or who can put sickle cell disease in their radar, this would be fantastic.
So again, sickle cell disease is an inherited condition.
It is.
So you're born with it, you die with it. It doesn't just go away. And I think that it's important for people to remember that, you know, and that because it's genetic, mm-hmm. that a lot of people are affected by it, mm-hmm. but also for us to remember that there's a propensity for infection with people who have sickle cell disease, because at very early ages, their spleens go away because of all the sickling that goes on. So that we see children with overwhelming infections that cause demise, mm-hmm. that mm-hmm. cause them to die very early. We see septicemia, mm-hmm. you know, which is an overwhelming infection. We see enlarged spleens. And I'm not really sure what you guys do when you have children with enlarged spleens. I think you probably lose a lot of children related to that as well.
We do, because sickle cell is not understood in Africa. They still think that it is witchcraft. A lot of people think about sickle cell and they see a child developing some sicknesses of some type. It's actually sickle cell. They think it is caused by witchcraft. And this is some of the things we are trying to demystify and bring to the knowledge of the people, that sickle cell is a disease. Like you said, it is a hereditary disease. You inherit it from your parents. And we want to put that knowledge into the people's thinking, because most people, and again, the other thing that we have seen in Africa is that if a child is born with sickle cell and they start developing that problem, then normally the men divorce their wives.
Well, I don't think that's unique to Africa.
Yeah.
I think that's a major thing that happens every place.
It's a major stigma.
Here in the U.S. that also occurs.
It does?
Because the feeling is that you got it from your mother.
Yes, and it's your wife who brought it along.
Yes.
The man doesn't realize he contributed equally, if not more,
absolutely,
towards this child becoming a sickle cell carrier.
And I think it's really because people don't have an understanding of sickle cell disease, and it's easier to bail out and blame someone else.
Yes, very easy to blame.
So I think that we see that same thing, and early on when we used to do a lot of genetic counseling,
yes,
we always tried to make sure that the male understood that you have equal responsibility in your child having sickle cell disease. And unfortunately, you guys are in very close-knit communities in Kenya. So the incidence of the sickle cell gene is high.
Very high.
You know, so that if you're mating with someone, you know, who has sickle cell trait, you are at risk
for having
a child. Who is
quite close to your family. You'll find the trait there. That's the danger we are having. Again, the other area that probably even you Americans should also be looking at is that you're getting a lot of people coming from Kenya to this place to study. Others are coming, they are just coming with what they call the green cards. And when they come here, they are bringing along the trait. And when they bring the trait, the likelihood of America also developing a very big community of sickle cell diseased people is very high. So if I were American, I would think of it like, let me attack the source. Let me prevent the source. So that I would put my thinking into Kenya or into African countries where sickle cell is prevalent to try and educate the people there. And if that happens, it can be very positive.
I think it's really important for us to just have good education protocols for how we can educate people about things. Because I think that a lot of things happen because people just don't have that knowledge base to prevent them from happening. And so even in your country, where there are a lot of people who have sickle cell disease.
Yes.
It's important that they understand sickle cell disease, the complications of sickle cell disease,
yes.
treatments related to sickle cell disease. What I'd be really interested in knowing is how you guys treat the pain that people experience as a result of sickle cell painful episodes.
In some places the few medicines that are available are available, but we have also maybe people have learned how to buy painkillers and other things. But you know, the sickle cell pain is such an excruciating pain that it cannot be treated with ordinary painkillers. So in some places they just have to do that because they have no alternative, and in some places, yes, you'll find, like, especially in towns, in large cities, the medicine will be available on private acquisition.
Unfortunately, we hear a lot about other countries don't use pain medicines like we use them. And my response to that is always, they don't have the pain medicines that we have.
Exactly.
So, I'm sure, because we're all brothers and sisters in the sickle cell experience, mm-hmm. People in the United States experience the same pain as people in any other country, mm-hmm. but the difference is that we have more sophisticated ways of treating that pain.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, I was kind of thinking about what you said about demystifying sickle cell, mm-hmm. and I think that even here we have this thing that happens because we... of what sickle cell does, and about the fact that when the babies are born, they're protected for that period of time with the fetal blood
yes.
cells, right?
The hemoglobin F.
Right, you get these beautiful babies,
yes,
and they're all fine. A large portion of them are.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some have difficulty from the beginning, but mm-hmm. most are protected, right, by the fetal blood cells. And then all of a sudden, these problems start occurring. So mm-hmm. what you're doing is you're trying to figure out, if you haven't been tested for sickle cell, what's going on, or the sudden swelling, and you're looking to see if there is an insect bite or something, and then there's nothing. I mean, it can be really
frustrating,
right? Or you're...
That's what I was telling you. When those things occur, most of them, because of lack of knowledge, they turn and they assume that it is witchcraft, yeah. and they treat it with a witch doctor. And the thing continues because the witch doctor doesn't remove away, like Pat says, it doesn't deal with the pain.
Right.
Right now, that is a big issue that we are tackling, and we are trying to tell the people. With our small resources, we are trying to put medicine in people's hands, such that if such a thing happens, and after the screening, after checking whether you have sickle cell disease, we will put in your hands some type of medicine that takes away the pain. But we can't satisfy everybody.
Right.
So we need the government to come in. We need the government resources to come in. The government doctors to come in. The social workers to come on board. We need that, and our government, African governments, I can say they are funny. They are very funny because they don't see this suffering on their people, and they take it casually, and especially because the sickle cell disease is transmitted through genetic patterns. They don't bother with it. If it was another epidemic like cholera, they would be there, spot on. But this one?
Do you think it's because it's not contagious?
It's because they don't know. It's a matter of advocacy.
I'm going to say this. He's saying the same things we're saying.
Yes.
We're absolutely.
Saying it, you're saying the same thing we're saying, but we're not saying it about our children. We are saying it about our children who survive and turn into adults. You're saying the same thing.
Mm-hmm,
because
mm-hmm.
what we're finding is, again, they care about the children.
More.
Right? I mean, thank God my child was born here, because
yes.
I have no doubt that my child would not be alive. But what happens when they become adults, it's almost like You're saying they think it's mystical, magical, or something that suddenly now their pain isn't real, or the source of their pain becomes something other than this genetic condition that they have no control over. Yes.
And what's really interesting here is that our expectations for life for people with sickle cell disease earlier on was you're not going to live to be 18.
Yes, yes.
And now we have people well in their 40s, 50s, some in their 60s who are living with sickle cell disease and who have had very successful lives as politicians, as doctors, as scientists, so that people can see that there is some value to people with sickle cell disease. And yet we're still struggling to make people understand that people with sickle cell disease who experience pain deserve the same humane treatment than anyone else who does not have sickle cell disease deserves.
Right.
And so this is the fight is real.
Yes.
You know, to make sure that sickle cell disease is taken seriously.
Yes, and people suffering from sickle cell disease, their conditions also should matter to our government, whether they are children or adults. In Africa, in Kenya, I've noticed that because of the desperation of the government to deal with the screening of young babies, they didn't know how to do it because there were no methods available. And the ones that were available were very expensive. So they just became desperate and they just left it as if nothing is happening. Here, it's when they get into their teenage, get into adulthood, that's when the government sets them on their own. But I'd like every government to take up the newborn screening and to consider as the child grows, because once you take care of that situation early, then the child can reach even, it doesn't matter, like they're living here to be 40, 45, 60, 65. And that can happen as long as the detection of sickle cell disease is done early.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
I think you've just pointed out our struggle. Those of us with adult children, there are children, our babies still, we get enraged and we really have a bad reputation in hospitals because they let our loved ones, just cry and beg for medicine.
For help.
Which they have. So, and they're cheap. There's not like we go in and we want the Hep C pill or something that was, thousands of dollars a pill, or even some of the chemo drugs, which are less expensive at maybe $500 a pill, or the EpiPen that you need if you eat peanuts or something. That we're talking about tablets or morphine has been around forever, so we're not like paying patent fees back or anything like that, or research fees. So inexpensive and plentiful, but being withheld.
Mm-hmm. The other thing that probably we haven't touched on is the stigma that comes along. We touch a little bit on that, but the stigma that comes up with the people with sickle cell disease, they are never maintained. Companies that employ them, they are soon fired. In Africa, because they are considered as unreproductive. They are not producing.
They're lazy.
They're
tired.
They are always looking for excuses to get off work. But the pain, the crisis that a sickle cell person goes through, is real. It's very, very real, and it's excruciating. And we are looking at situation in Africa where we can put these people who have got sickle cell disease, we can establish organizations which will be sickle cell disease friendly. That means if I work for a particular company and I have sickle cell disease, whether I come to work or not, and this is only when I have crisis, not every day. We don't want people lazing around and not coming to work simply because they have sickle cell disease, because we want them to live a normal life. And without an income, I am telling you, you are a sick person, because you cannot sustain yourself, you cannot pay your own house rent, you cannot buy yourself anything, you will always depend on people. So we are trying to put programs and situations where we can put these people who have sickle cell disease on programs that will sustain them. And one of the things that we are experimenting with is a company that we have started in Nairobi that is going to employ 80% of the people who will be working in that company must be warriors.
I like that.
And only 20% will be others.
So will there be job sharing there?
Sharing jobs?
Job sharing where if one person can't come.
If they can come, we have the 20%. The 20% will replace you for the 2, 3 days or 4 days or 1 week that you're hospitalized.
Like a relief worker.
Like a relief worker.
Sounds like a great plan.
It is a great plan, and we are trusting God for that. And once it comes through, we are going to be able to grow it and even have an advocacy department where the warriors will be involved most of the times in advocacy work. And it can be, I'm telling you, we want to cover the whole country. I wish we could cover it in a week.
Yes, that would be wonderful. But it takes much more than that.
It makes much more than that. Yes, it does. I wish we can get our government to put in strong policies of screening. That's the secret of this thing. If we can get them to get the screening done, that's it. We are done.
Well, if they get the screening done, you can identify who's affected.
And what we can do.
And then you can start programs for
them.
We
put them on management.
Yes.
We put them on management. And the earlier we do it, the better.
The less damage.
But our governments are funny. I call them funny because they don't see what you see.
Yeah.
You guys are in the middle. If your election hasn't been sorted out yet, has it?
It has not yet. It went to court and they reversed the...
So do you know Dr. Otino?
Yes.
I think so.
It could be.
And yeah. I know we're going to
Because he's working on screening.
Uh-huh.
And he's working there. On bringing some...
The machines to screen.
From here.
Phoresis machine. He has it.
The phoresis machine to exchange, transfuse people with sickle cell disease.
Mm-hmm.
He's actively working on that. He already has the machine.
The machine that transfuses?
That takes the blood out and then puts
another blood lot.
Yeah.
How does that help? Because the genes, the bone
marrow. It doesn't change your genes or anything. It only gives you relief for 6 weeks. Couple of months,
mm-hmm.
and then if it's a kid that's had a stroke,
mm-hmm.
they want to exchange so that they don't have repeated strokes.
Mm-hmm.
And mm-hmm. so that's what he's working on.
Mm-hmm. To me, I'd rather we go a little higher than that.
Well, you guys are doing the screening, mm-hmm. but you're going to need some treatment options.
Yes,
and that's one of the treatment.
That's
options.
One of the treatment options.
That's what we do here for patients that have had strokes.
Mm-hmm.
To prevent them from having additional strokes.
Mm-hmm.
We start them on hydroxyurea.
Yes.
We start them on with exchange transfusion,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
you know, so that they're getting non-sickle related blood.
Right.
To prevent them from having more strokes.
Right, right.
So that's one of the things that he's doing.
Right.
And he's working with a company
mm-hmm.
to give him the machines and to allow, and working with the government to allow that to happen.
Okay. Get him. Let's meet.
If not, I'm going to give you his contact information.
Yes, I can talk to him.
Mm-hmm.
He's a wonderful guy.
Mm-hmm.
He's actually talking with Ash right now about getting things done.
Mm-hmm.
I put him in touch with the Ash folks, and he's been.
You need also to put us across to them because we are at the base.
Yeah.
We are the ones that are getting the heavy burden.
I think we're going to come back with a little more discussion about advocacy work and how you see that working in your villages and going into your towns. And maybe we can learn something from each other.
Mm-hmm.
Once again, we're on thepowerofvoices.com. This is Access Advocacy. We're with Pat Corley and Bishop Bob.
Thank you very much.
Welcome back to Access Advocacy on thepowerofvoices.com. So when we left off, we had just gotten to our favorite subject, advocacy. Let's hear this concept of advocacy from you, you were saying that your initial movement started within the church?
Yes. We are looking at, the church is a very big body in Kenya, and having a lot of movement, a lot of people in the church. So if we can reach to the Christians, and also let me call it religious bodies like Islam and Christianity, both, because sickle cell doesn't know
religion.
So we'll be reaching out to the churches and training church members to become advocates of sickle cell issues in their regions. And once we have that, I am sure we'll make a big break, a breakthrough in that area. Because most people, frankly, do not know much about sickle cell. You stop somebody on the street and ask somebody, do you know anything about sickle cell? They tell you, no, never heard of it in some areas. But once we use the church and we use the other available media houses and newspapers and meetings, one-on-one, we will be able to put this message across. And the message is, let's get tested. We are looking at it from the point of view, even people who are getting married, they need, just before they do the marriage, to have their status identified. We did that with HIV, and it was quite successful. I don't think these days any church minister does weddings before they test for HIV, and they quite agree with it. We are not testing to stop their wedding, neither are we testing to interfere with their right to get married, but we are testing just to make sure that they know what they are getting into.
Right.
And subsequently, if somebody says he will go ahead and just marry regardless of the status, then we cancel that person or that couple, we cancel them accordingly. But to reach out to the population in matters of information about sickle cell, what can be done, what issues of prevention, how you can avoid it, and what you can do if you have sickle cell disease.
You know, fortunately in the U.S., now mm-hmm. that we've been doing newborn screening for a while, mm-hmm. Those results are kept.
Mm-hmm.
And so the babies are screened at birth. Mm-hmm. And so we are able to share with the family that their child has sickle cell trait,
yes,
or whatever their status is.
Mm-hmm.
And on down the line, as they become a little older, they can retrieve those results from our state departments of health. I just think that people should know earlier than marriage time.
Mm-hmm.
Because,
yes,
you know, when you lay down and start having children, you don't ask anybody what your trait status is, you know.
So, agreed.
But if you have that information early on, and most of them probably have encountered a family member who has sickle cell disease,
mm-hmm.
they might think twice about, you know, even if I marry this person, is this someone I want to have a child by?
Mm-hmm.
So I think that we need to, if we're talking about educating and informing,
mm-hmm.
I think we need to do that at appropriate times,
yes,
that can actually help us to make good decisions,
uh-huh,
about what we're going to do in regards to our reproductive rights.
Agreed. We are doing something we are calling the sickle cell register in Kenya.
Yes.
And once we identify that you have sickle cell disease or trait, we are keeping that. Now we are building a database for future. And we are doing that. We are already in that process.
So you're also, because here we had a recently, and we had heard a report at the conference that we just concluded in, mm-hmm, Fresno, where they talked about our registry, but ours basically was looking for people who actually had sickle cell. We weren't tracking.
I know we took
Information from trait carriers, because I, of course, registered myself, but I'm not sure where that is right now, but I think this is really good that mm-hmm. you are from the beginning now saying we're tracking both.
But that information already lives in the health departments in all of the states. So the sickle cell trait information lives there, you uh-huh. know. So that, say for instance, you had a kid that was born in 1972, mm-hmm. they could go back and retrieve that person's information for them. The test is simple. You could have the test redone mm-hmm. also, you know, because it's just a blood test. But we also have, like Adrian said, we have a registry. It's called Get Connected.
Uh-huh.
So hopefully that'll work for you guys, and hopefully it'll make a difference.
It will.
And people will become more knowledgeable about what their genetic.
Our challenge was the method of screening. That was our biggest problem. But now that we have a cheaper way of identifying, at least we can identify the basic the sick person and the trait person, and we can do that now.
So does your screening method, is it done with a hemoglobin electrophoresis?
It is. We do it with a kit in the field, and then if we identify you're carrying whatever trait you have, then we'll send you for further verification with the electrophoresis machine.
Okay.
Yes.
I keep thinking we should do something. I want to do something. We're going to take this information, I think, and we're going to see how we can be supportive. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, we don't have to have things in a big splash, but maybe
small steps, baby steps.
Mm-hmm. And I think you're absolutely right in identifying the trait and the disease, because you have to start there.
Yes,
you have to start there. We know here that starting at that point with screening and identifying, and then moving on to the protocols for children, mm-hmm. hopefully getting some protocols in for treatment for our adults. The thing now is that we have, as you know, several pharmaceutical companies who are working towards mm-hmm. treatments and cures, so that in the not too distant future, we can see a real change happening.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I think for the first time in history,
mm-hmm.
People living with sickle cell and sickle cell trait could have hope that at some point they could have children and not be worried about the effects of this.
Yes, that would be wonderful.
It hasn't come yet, but right now we have to do our homework, be diligent mm-hmm. and mindful. Again, our babies are born, they're beautiful, they get fat and chubby, you know, most of them, and they look really good, and mm-hmm. then, mm-hmm. you know, for 9 months. And
I think your biggest challenge is, though, is to show your government
yes.
that by initiating the moves that you want to initiate, mm-hmm. it's going to be, it's going to save them money in the long run.
It is. It'll save them.
Yes.
Millions of
I think you got to convince them of that, because until you can convince them that you are generating a plan to actually save them some money
mm-hmm.
so that you can decrease the cost of taking care of people with sickle cell disease,
mm-hmm.
You're going to be struggling and fighting.
When people are admitted in our referral hospitals, they are admitted with serious complications, liver breakdown, heart condition, the strokes. And the cost of government treating any of those conditions is not equal.
So I think that's your argument.
Yeah, that,
we can save you money.
Yeah. We can save the government a lot of money.
We can save you money.
A lot of money.
That's, yes.
That's also our argument.
Yes.
So again, we have it.
Mm-hmm.
We have so much in common.
Mm-hmm.
And working together.
Working together with the government.
Working with the government.
So good luck on what you're doing.
Thank you very much.
If you need our help, we're here.
We'll call.
Email.
or telephone, or whatever.
Telephone.
Thank you very much.
We're in this fight together.
I thank you very much. Even for hosting me today, and this is wonderful. At least the world now knows that we have almost the same conditions across the seas in Kenya and in East African countries. Yes. Sickle cell disease is a big issue,
and an international
issue. An international issue.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, this has been really informative, and thank you again, Bishop Bob Kabugi, and super nurse advocate Pat Corley. And I want to thank our audience for joining us. You can hear this podcast on our website, accessadvocacy.org. That's AccisAdvocacy.org. Thank you, and we'll be in touch. Bye.
God bless.
Bye.